introduction was probably, my bio was probably longer than what I'm going to read, so apologies for that. I'll chop that in the future. So let me just, I'll just set my clock so I don't keep you forever. Okay, so my name is Liz Burke. I'm not going to say much more about myself. You probably only need to know that I'm a Capricorn. I think you pretty much know everything else. So this is my debut collection. It was just published last month. So I'm just going to crack on and start reading you some poems from it. And you can see what you think. So this first poem that I'm going to read is called I Don't Write You Love Poems Anymore. It's not that bad. I don't write you love poems anymore. All my words are kept for the children, sequestered to chronicle little tempests and successes, swaddles of coats and jumpers, boots slightly large on feet, as the oldest takes her chances in every puddle she can find. Instead of the resting hollow of your hip, my words now know the fit of skull and cheek against my shoulder, the weight of each of our babies as they fall asleep. I write the rasp of breaths lovely in my ear, how pillows furrow with their heavy heads. I compress this life into a collage of simile and verse, discover that writing them is like carrying a lake in my hands, too much lost by the time pen meets page. In our years together, love, I have written you with all the heart a pen can hold, your warmth recalled in every city we pass through, nights wrapped in hotel sheets, after hours drinking with strangers, the heady risks of our early years. These days, those stories don't fall easy into ink. My poems exist in how small faces startle when the light switch alters evening in the kitchen, the way little fingertips pad a pane of glass in the burnt umber twilight before the rain comes. As I go through the poems, you'll see, well, you'll hear that a lot of them are rain and winter and autumn poems, because I live in Galway and we only get three seasons. So I was trying to think of, do I have anything that would reflect the heat that we're facing at the moment, so that we all didn't feel a bit kind of out of sorts. So this is a poem that was written this day last year, on the one day of sunshine that we have in Spittle. And it's part of a sequence called Seasons You Witness, and this is Spittle, May 2017. Grass stains on her knees, juice drops down her shirt. She keeps tiny stones in polka dot pockets to build small houses for her sister. She twirls home smelling of sun cream, hair spun like blades of grass, threads around threads, eyes brighter than thought. She's living the thrill of being three in summertime, and she will gather this day in her hands. She hums in her chair, talking her way through her snack. Crackers crumble as words race. She's full of all that we can do. You and me and Nova, Mama. She conjures bog walks and donkeys, whispers that she knows which carrots are sweetest for the baby. Her bag is packed for travel, everything we need for our half-mile wander. She leads us out the drive, ears trained to hear what's coming from a distance. She plots a course past familiar ditches, promises the flowers she'll come back to collect them later. Grass stains on her knees and juice drops down her shirt. She keeps tiny stones in polka dot pockets to build small houses for her sister. So my wife and I, as much as we tried, we couldn't get pregnant on our own. So we needed some intervention. So we were going through We went through a couple of years of fertility treatment, and while we were doing that, we didn't really tell anyone what was going on. It was kind of private. So there were a few occasions where you'd kind of get taken back by what maybe people would say by accident, and you kind of get your heart broken without anybody intending it. And this is one of those occasions. This poem is called Lucky. Under a shaded frame with places set to celebrate, a woman angles and without removing her spoon from the potato salad, sears the child at her shoulder. I wish you had never been born. The girl, no more than 8, swallows her dismissal, washes it down with a mouth full of burning summer, her flushed cheeks inverting their heat to cleanse her palate. Her mother, mouth now full, eagles the assembly, lands carrion eyes on us. You're lucky girls, they're horrible little things, never have children. We sit side by side, you and I, thigh nearly touching thigh, as in the rooms we have spent our time waiting to be led from grey carpet to grey walls, from the tick of one timepiece to another, seasons of hours and minutes, cycles with a before and after. We sit in plastic chairs, the same posture as when we have depersonalized the personal into dark ink and the smallest tickable boxes. This woman waits now, consumes the stiff line of your neck. No words left to say under this gazebo. No action but to pluck the spoon from her slackened grip and deliver her the image of her own distortion. Your cutlery clicks together on the plastic table. We will leave soon. Your appetite is gone. The unlucky months have killed your taste buds, swathed our journeys home in silence. So my wife did get pregnant, and we have two girls now. One's 4, her name is Juno, and the other one's 2, her name is Nova. Aww. So when Yvonne was pregnant with Juno, it had come out that she had always really wanted to get, she's an artist, so she had always wanted to do get a portrait done of herself when she was pregnant to kind of keep the image, I suppose, and to freak out great-grandchildren, that kind of a deal. So when she was overdue, she was like, okay, am I going to do it? I said, yeah. So this poem is about that, and this is called The Painting. Standing in your pelt in the living room, had you ever been more yourself? You had called in the painter to put a frame on narrowing days, recalled a dream of yours from before you were meant to dream such things, that if your body ever became more than bone and flesh, you would surrender to your skin, commit it all to canvas. A Friday after work, beyond the due date, and you well ready to meet the person who loomed within you, to know her toes, her heels, her elbows, from more than car ride eagle sing-alongs and maternity shop browsing. That Friday you were set, when the artist came to make new our domestic space with gradients of tone and shadow, boards shifting minutely under his feet as our furniture became other than shapes we knew, the room different than we lived in it, sheets layered to squeeze the light out, draping lines that made no sense till you stood within them. And for the swell of an hour, lit from the floor, you held yourself and her too, leaning this way and that, front foot and back and in repose, so he could conceive your view from every angle. Choose how to isolate your forms and pull you both from a blackened canvas. Lull the two of you into the corner of this very room, where you hang always in the before time. Our first daughter's name is Juno, so this is her name poem called Juno. I gave you a warrior name, brazen, audacious, a statement of intent. After the third scan, I set out across the world's mythologies to uncover the name to herald you. I found you in the pages of an old hardback, barely 2 inches in a row of columns, sensible, poised, waiting for me to arrive and collect you at the obvious conclusion, assured that this is where you had always been. For weeks after our first meeting, you kept me company. Your name fell in ink from my pen until that sturdy bulk of letters came as familiar as my own. The shape of you rolled around my mouth like a boiled sweet, pushing taste to unreachable corners, forcing my buds awake until I had a full sense of you. Your vowels whispered through my lips, soft as the steam after a kettle click. And when you arrived, emergent, slow to pink, but quickly, so quickly, your name gushed out of my mouth like your first breath, triumphant, your first victory, your battle cry. So, I have another offensive birthday party poem to follow on, to bookend the experience in the poem Lucky. I didn't realise that after your children were born, you get thrown into these social situations with the parents of other children, by virtue of the fact that your child is friends with another child. And there are these weird kind of social situations that you have to navigate. And it's funny as well, you know, being in a two-mom family, it's kind of funny when people who don't necessarily know us figure out which one of us was the pregnant one, I suppose. So this is a poem called Counterfeit. Easy as talk at a child's party, I cluster as one of their number. When the men fade, attention turns from woman to woman, lap to lap. I do not surrender my baby to the communal hold. Are you tired? Is she 3 months? How these words shape me. They set me up in a hospital bed, girded, pressing, sweat and spit when the contractions build, tears when the work of my body is over. 2 small questions assume the set of my womb, the establishment of milk, a healthy supply given the child who gums into the fabric covering my shoulder. Propriety requires my answer to be my lack of sleep, chapped nipples, swollen ducts, all the bruisings and restitchings of childbirth. I hum and rock the baby, knowing the moment my interlocutor sees through me. The line of her lips tells that she knows the lie of my body, sees camouflage in the extra weight at my hips, subterfuge in the curve and sag of my breasts. It is her final sweep that does it, her cross-check of features, my face against the smaller one. I see her check my measurements, the distance from eyes to ears, lips to chin, the cleft I do not have. I see her hold these facts loose as coins in her palm. I see her put those parts of me between her teeth and clamp down, finding nothing but a lightweight metal, a hollow ring, a counterfeit. What has my body done? Even though the tree shares bark and branch, the sky was promised leaves. Even though the lake can't count itself in fish, it mutely panics into a river. Have you ever watched a magpie gut a field mouse? Witnessed it slink threat-like from rushes, with a small body pierced in its thick black beak? All brightness pulled out, picked over like the ransacked contents of a jewellery box, sifted until the thief can raise its head, satisfied with a mouthful of still warm heart. So this is a poem that's part of a sequence for our second daughter, Nova. I realized when I was putting the collection together that I had written that whereas Juno got one poem, her name poem Nova ended up getting four, that started when she was maybe almost 12 weeks pregnant, and then it all journeyed through and it ended on Nova's first birthday. So this is Nova's first birthday poem. And it'll kind of give you an idea of what her personality's like. Middle cup of courage. You jump off the round of the earth, unafraid to spill yourself, but you never lose a drop. Your closed eyes trust the hammock of the dark. It's enough to stop a heart. You tug the rug of family to your chest. All taught, your language sounds out where we fall, within these walls and where our pictures rest. We cluster still in your clenching fist. Eager eggshell baby, your wolf blue eyes have shone since my scissors cut your cord. Today, unwrap the earliest hour, the promises uttered in the room where you breathed first. Keep yourself for poetry, works of art. Of my body, you took nothing, not cheek, nor chin, nor fingers. Only my vowels, warming syllables, fill your mouth. But use me as a platform as you wish. Plant your feet, bend your knees, release. So this is a poem called I See My Bones in No Other. There is a place in the face of family where all the other faces live. Their bones and skin align to remind us that we are merely segments of blistering fruit. Without digging nails beneath familial skin, there is a reflex to read everyone the same. What else can happen when the set of an eyebrow can yield where you come from, who you come from, who are your people? But, baby girl, there is something more than blood between us. It is there in the way your small head sits between my jaw and shoulder, in how your temple fits against my chin. Maybe loving your mother changed me physically. Maybe she opened my features so your blinking eyes can sew against the side of my mouth, so your sleeping body can shape into my waiting bones. So I've been thinking an awful lot in the last few years about what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a poet and what it means to be a woman poet and where I fit in all of those designations, I suppose. So this is a poem where all of those things coincide, and it's called Women Poets Teach Me How to Be a Woman. First, I was shown a world through a window. Invited to witness at 17 how one woman's heat could be passed to another. The comfort and risk of a closed door, delicate and sweet as a promise. The way soft lighting could bruise silence into a throat. Signposts in the yellow room, all pointing to images in my own mirror. Stanzas thick with language I ache to translate. And when I finally found the words, tasted them in the curve of a pale neck, I spoke them aloud, not in my voice but hers. Recognized the rabbit's foot dim with dust, cooling jewels alone in their beds, and all night I felt their absence and I burned. Years later, love led me to where women waited with children young like mine. their lexicon full of all I couldn't name, handed over heavy as bad news, details penned precisely. I read till I understood the burning in my gut, the loss they knew, those women who loved with an almost fearful love. They filled their books with ways my own parents remembered their small son, gone too soon from them. These women put into words what a swing looks like when a child no longer plays in it, how bags of clothes drag in a tearful hoisting to an attic's dark, one assured that the art of losing isn't hard to master, but how wrong she turned out to be, how wrong. If it's okay, I'm going to read a poem that isn't in the collection. It's part of some new work that I've been working on. I've been spending an awful lot of time down in Cork for the last year because my dad has been sick and he's been in the Mercy an awful lot. So this is a very, it's probably a bit of a bummer, it's a pancreatic cancer poem. So I was thinking about what it meant, you know, like someone in your family's diagnosed and I was thinking about pancreas and all of these things. You don't really go around going, how's your pancreas? And you don't really think about it. And then I was thinking about, you know, those delicacies that are made, sweetbread, that it's made with like pancreas and other things, and how you can make something out of something horrible. So this is kind of what I'm working on. So this poem is called The Promise of Sweetbread. Like everything, it begins in the tissues. Mutation concealed where no light gathers. And it's left to me to explain how a delicacy can be fashioned from such offending material. Demonstrate how to pluck items from your torso as will defend and keep you longer. Milk white, a telling liquor from the drain in your side. Dislodged poison, spilling your secrets, millimetre by marked up millilitre. I've already promised that I'll make something new from this. Articulate instructions you've left in soluble particles to adhere to my own structures for always. Ridged in the moss I've plied from your paving stones. Ways to give life to listless, unmoving articles. And I'm chaperoning mementos like you showed me. Corralling, deciding which meat meets the scrap heap and what these days will keep. So come beside me while you can argue such vanity. Help me raise totems from their ward wall lurking. Split hairs with me over thymus, throat, gullet, versus pancreas, heart, belly. We can talk immunity and T cells over steeping blends from deepest, darkest non-geography. That loose leaf that comes out on occasion. Weddings mostly. Not this time when the priest calls to the door. They have email addresses on cards now. Such a foul piece of architecture, worse than a low-call number. I won't get there on time, but parts of you are in my pocket. I'll hide them in my upper anterior, directly behind my sternum. And I challenge any tape-measuring box ticker to crack me open. I'm keeping your elements until I can devise a recipe bold enough to sweeten with all the things you promised. The inner body items that require all the stars in the system. Pink-grey lobes, those splitting molecules that recognise that there has never been such a call for light as this. So it's been a bit of a bummer of a year. And when I was finishing up this collection, I ended up writing some poems about my wife and how she is kind of, like, she's been, like, as anybody's spouse would be, kind of the glue, and she's been super just brilliant through everything. So I wrote this originally as a sonnet, but it failed as a sonnet, so it's not a sonnet anymore, not that that makes any difference. But this is a poem for my wife, and it's called For She Who Loves Me. She's scribbling promises again, making plans where she knows I'll find them. Today, she collects treefall with our girls, all neighbour windowsill chatter, her easy closed gate lean. She presses leaves to brown paper, shows our eldest that colour means each season can be savoured. How not everything is lost because Mama cried on the drive home. I watch from my corner as she leads small hands towards questions in the Connemara wall. It's as if this autumn garden understands how treasure translates to tiny fingers. And when the three come in, soil soft hands hiding in wells of coat sleeves, her promises are held there too, in small palms and the way they hold my face, how I feel necessary under their touch. How in the evening, when I'm grief low, she lends me her weight, definite as a vow, because she knows how pain can unmoor a body. She has seen enough in the turning of tides to promise that what arrives will ebb again. She reminds me that nothing roots us more than gravity. So we're raising our children as pagans. More, I suppose, kind of pagan slash atheist. And every so often, the oldest one will come up with questions. Like the other night, she asked me, why do we have bones? And I was like, okay, here we go. But one of the first questions that she asked was, what is God? So we have to deal with that. So this is our explanation for that. And it's called The Trees and the Breeze. When she turns her face towards you, the half moon of her silhouette, backlit by late October, she asks, what is God, Mummy? Quick as a tongue against teeth, with words that sound like they are all taught, you crouch, turn her to the view, the red lemonade leaves of the cherry blossom, dripping silver of the birch peeking through moss. You tell her to look, and with eyes so like yours, she looks. You say, my God is the trees and the breeze. At two, she knows both tangibles, has understood your idea of God against the soft peach of her cheek, her baby chin, her tongue in the rain falling, wind on that sliver of skin where her wool hat fails to kiss her eyebrows, how air teases fingers poking from pink sleeves, too busy to keep their gloves. She counts and stores in her mind all the parts of your God that are hers. The mess of cherry blossoms by the gate, her big curving birch with the fairy door healed into the bark. She has walked the tiny stone path of the fairies to that tree's base, laid her palm flat on the trunk to read the story of the knots. She tells us how butterflies visit its mossy coat for their dinner, knows that trusting the tree with the press of her hands will steady her, that she can stretch up from her feet, let her spine and head tilt back, and between the strength of birch and the dark spittle soil, she is safe to raise her face and peer up through the offset rungs of branches to see her world mapped in clouds that linger in the cold Connemara sky. Just two more. This is the title poem of the book. The book is called The Road Slowly. People ask, well, why is it slowly? And they go, well, when you're walking with little kids, it ain't the road quickly. So this is pretty much a snapshot of what my life has been like, I suppose, for the last couple of years, walking a country road. This is called The Road Slowly. We idle in the fall between footplants, rise with the ditches, down again with the drains. On this Tuesday, buggy wheels trundle in the lulls of staring cattle and January fields. The neighbours all claim your notice, and I'm so glad we're raising you with manners. The whole road yours, grass tufts and gravel, the Rottweiler rattling his stable yard chain. At your height, the world is all wall and bracken, stone and puddle. You don't know the horizon. But as your sister babbles, your eyes shift to the birds, lake and sea in the one view. Water that isn't always story but blue, but shades of the weather, as we are. So this is my final poem, and I'd like to thank you for being a very attentive audience. It's nice to be down in Cork. So this is a poem, I suppose it's a poem that was important because it was something that I wrote that changed things for me. It was probably a poem that helped me sort of become a mom, if that's not too loaded. I wrote it when Juno was 8 months old, and I kind of, it's strange when you're a non-biological mother, you kind of go through, you come at things from a different angle. So this is my poem of becoming, I suppose. So thanks for listening. And this poem is called Nurture. In the 9 months I didn't nourish you, I made notes. I studied the seasons for ingredients to encourage your growth. Scraps of paper, post-its hidden, in case anyone would view my thoughts, pity my trivia of leaves and berries. A mom, yet not a mother. A woman, yet not a woman. My preparation took place in private, not in maternity wards or hospital corridors, but in the hallways of my mind, where I could put up pictures, timelines, fill corkboards with plans. As the folic acid built your brainstem, I collated ideas to stimulate it further, mapped journeys for us, paths we could walk together, a staggered relay to start when your other mother passed your tiny form to me. And I could see myself holding your hand, using my limbs to scaffold the structure your mother put so beautifully in place. I am your mom without the biology of mothering. All I have for you is my heart, my brain, my lists of things. All but those 9 months when I was waiting. Thank you very much.